Call the Transportation Public Safety Finance Division back to order for the purpose of taking up this time with Feeling, Senate File 1647. So members, so we had to take a few policy provisions out of the larger finance bill, and so we dropped those into an amendment that I will offer, the A12 amendment, and then of course that gives us the opportunity to take other amendments if folks are so interested. I suspect they are. I hear a rumor there are other amendments in the room. So why don't we start? Kent, why don't you take the gavel momentarily? And I will move the A12 amendment. And members, these are various provisions we've had some discussion about. I know Senator Kiffmeyer's not crazy about them, that allows for some additional criteria as well as some performance measures and the like for the Corridors of Commerce program, the TED program. What else?
Need an America.
And then, but in terms of the, so those are the two programs that have the
right.
Okay. And then we have the two Made in America provisions from Senator Tomassoni. Is that it? Oh, yeah.
Year.
And then, Ms. Remind me. Say that again.
That reporting every year.
The Disadvantaged Business Enterprise program, rather than have a report every 2 years, we'd have a report on that activity every year to the legislature. So those were the provisions that we took out and put into the A12. Questions, members? A lot of discussion about these items, so we understand them. Oh, I'm sorry, I have to get back, acting like I'm the chair. No, go ahead.
Okay. So seeing no questions or comments, members, all those in favor of the A12 amendment, say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails.
All right. Senator Reiner.
Mr. Chairman, if you're ready for additional.
Sure.
I have the A14 amendment.
All right. Senator Reiner has the A14 amendment.
And members, while it's being distributed, you may remember from our work on House File 87, I had some concerns involving the Highway 23 reconstruction project in Duluth and the Duluth Zoo, primarily about a trail that's going to be constructed under that bridge that sort of terminates right into the heart of the zoo. I had a requirement that MnDOT pick up some lots to create a trailhead and some parking. That's obviously a fiscal note and a little bit problematic. So, members, with this amendment on the policy bill, I dropped that requirement. All I'm saying is that when MnDOT does the road and the bridge, instead of just leaving the trail under the bridge, sort of into heart of the zoo, they're going to bring it back up to grade with the road. And I did talk some time ago with a District 1 engineer who said as long as they knew by June when they started this project that they'd be able to do that without any additional cost. So I'd appreciate your support on this language.
All right. Thank you. Questions, members? All right. Did anyone want to testify on the A14? No. All right. All in favor of the A14, say aye.
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 Opposed, no. Motion carries. All right. Anything further, members? Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have the A13 amendment.
All right. Senator Senjum has the A13, moves the A13 amendment. And go ahead and start describing.
Okay. It's something, Mr. Chair, I spoke to a month or so ago. It pertains to drivers, if you will, who are transporting things as simple as gasoline or fuel oil or whatever all over Minnesota. And the fact that under the Homeland Security regulations, they have to get background checks and be fingerprinted. And it just so happens that if you live in my area of the state, you can go to Fort Dodge, Iowa or Roseville, Minnesota to be fingerprinted, which seems a little unreasonable given we have fingerprinting stations all over everywhere. And so it is just an amendment to ask the Department of Public Safety to recommend to us by December 1st of this year any recommended or offer any recommendations they may have to fix that problem, and to see whether or not we can use services within the framework of Minnesota to make that fingerprinting process a little easier.
Okay. Thank you. Questions, members? Would anyone like to testify on A13? Seeing none, all in favor of the A13 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion carries. Thank you, Senator Sundrum. Any other amendments? Senator Westrum.
Mr. Chair, I guess I'd ask staff. I think Bonnie has. I have two amendments. I'd take the sunset repeal first. If I just the number, I don't recall offhand.
Mr. Chair and Senator Westrum, it's the A16, and your other amendment is the A15.
A15. Okay, A16, Mr. Right. Chair, I'd move. Yeah.
So Senator Westrum offers the A16 amendment.
And Mr. Chair, while it's coming Senator around, members, what this amendment would do, we talked about it earlier at greater length. This relates to the mini trucks or the unconventional vehicles, but specifically the mini trucks, and it repeals or removes the sunset that's in current law. When we made provisions for the counties before, we had set a sunset at 5 or 6 years out, and that is 2015 is the sunset year. So this would remove that and allow the counties to still have that provision. If I can connect the dots for you, the county testifier today was referring to this local law that I believe they were supportive of, and I don't want to misconstrue anything, but it's the sunset repeal. That's what this amendment is, to allow the counties to still have that provisional license option, especially as it's necessary if the other language doesn't prevail. If the other language does prevail, hopefully it does, through the session, then this would be less of an issue. But that's what this amendment does, is removes the sunset.
All right. Thank you, Senator.
Mr. Chair, we did pass this out of committee, as I recall, a few weeks back.
Okay. Thank you. Senator Osmick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator, so what you're saying is, I have a constituent that has one of these mini trucks, and what you're saying is you want to simply allow him to have the same use he currently has as authorized by Hennepin County that you have today, and now you extend beyond the end of July 31st of this year, so it's an extension of the existing law.
That's correct, Mr. Chair. That's correct.
All right. Thank you. questions on the A16? Would anyone like to testify on the A16? All right. All in favor of the A16 Westrum amendment, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. No. He's having consistency.
Division.
The motion passes.
Mr. Chair, yes. I'm going to talk to the industry and see if they can put an electric motor in some of these mini trucks.
Well, they are trendy and they're energy efficient, so I think my hipster constituency is going to start thinking, having second thoughts about it.
You might have a primary challenge, Mr.
Yeah, from the hipster caucus, yes.
So, all right. Mr. Chair, I have another amendment, but others can go first if they choose.
Any other amendments, members? Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I have the A20 amendment.
Senator Peterson offers the A20. Go ahead and describe it, Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is a bill that I touched on briefly this morning related to electronic advertising devices or billboards. Essentially what this bill, you'll see there's just two short sections that are underlined there starting on 1.5 that talks about the actual definition of the of this device or billboard. And so you'll see there many of the concerns, which I agree with, expressed in the past have been that they want folks want the images to remain static, so that this does not allow animation, flashing, or moving lights, or video, which becomes more distracting, and so it's only for static text and images. And then on the second page, you'll see in line 2.1, or moving down farther into 2.3, the other main concern we hear about is the frequency of the ad changing, and that is current policy, which is 6 seconds. So I would urge your support, Mr. Chair. We do have a representative from the industry to testify in favor of this as well.
Great. Thank you. I know Mr. Coyle wanted to share some knowledge, wisdom, insight, poetry with us. Welcome, Mr. Coyle.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Peter Coyle with Larkin Hoffman. I represent the Outdoor Advertising Association of Minnesota. As Senator Peterson indicated, the language that's before you simply codifies existing and longstanding MnDOT policy with respect to digital signage along state highways. It doesn't change anything about where they can be located. It doesn't change anything about how they can be operated. It simply puts into statute what they otherwise have in policy, but as a memorandum. And we would appreciate the permanence that statute would provide based on the level of investment that's required for these structures. MnDOT has reviewed the language, and I don't want to speak for them, but I believe that they're okay with it. But they can speak for themselves if you're concerned about that. That's the background of the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Coyle. Questions? Senator Kent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Peterson, I know you said the industry has weighed in on this one. The concern I have and that I always have about this particular type of outdoor board is that it affects neighborhoods, lights. I know you're talking about, I mean, even every 6 seconds is a fairly frequent change of image. Have efforts been made to consider public input on this change in policy?
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and Mr. Coyle can add to that, but my own personal experience has been oftentimes the local municipalities deal with that as well, but I'll let Mr. Coyle respond.
Mr. Chairman,
Mr.
Senator
Coyle.
Kent, Senator Peterson's correct. This is dealt with primarily at the local government level where MnDOT sets the broad parameter, if you will. Local jurisdictions have the authority to be much more prescriptive if they choose to be, including by not allowing signs of any type. And some cities take that approach. The other thing I would tell you, which isn't directly responsive, but many cities have embraced the technology on a partnership basis with the private industry where they can use space on these signs to communicate time-sensitive public safety notices involving lost children, some kind of an accident that's affecting freeway traffic, where the need to disseminate information broadly and on a time-sensitive basis is available to them at no charge.
Thank you.
All right. Anything further, members? Any questions? Would anyone else like to testify on the A20 Peterson Amendment? All right. All in favor of the A20, say aye.
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 Opposed, no. Motion carries. Thank you. All right. Anything further, members? Senator Westrum.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the A15 Amendment.
Oh. Senator Westrum moves the A15 amendment.
Mr. Chair, what this amendment does, we've heard different debates, a lot of time spent in this committee about the texting statute and whether it technically covered looking at or the use of a GPS, and this would clarify that statute. There was a little conflicting reports between here and the Senate floor discussions, but here the last I recall was that it strictly interpreted would cover that. And I've talked to different members offline and other folks who in confidence kind of said, well, I look at my GPS sometimes when I'm driving, and I think a lot of people do in a responsible way, but this would just clarify what the State Patrol or one of the testifiers had given us, that they don't enforce it this way, and this would just clarify that statute. As you know, we are doubling the fines of texting while driving. In other legislation, this would just clarify that the GPS use is not part of that statute.
So your goal, Senator Westrum, is to let folks look at their their GPS.
Correct.
So they can find their
way.
All right. Questions, members? Senator Newman.
Mr. Chair, Senator Weston, how's law enforcement going to know what you're looking at? If we specifically accept, I happen to agree with you. I mean, we should be able to look at the screen, but how's law enforcement going to distinguish what you're looking at? This would be a class.
Senator Westrum. Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Newman, I'm not going to profess to maybe know the answer to the question, but there must be a way. If the standard now is to not cite or ticket or pull you over for looking at the GPS versus the process of texting, they must already have a way to do that if that's what they testified earlier is that they don't cite for that. So I don't know if I know the answer, but obviously it's visual. It's a lot like seatbelt use, and if they see a seatbelt on you, it's different than if they don't see a seatbelt on. Some of it, if it's below the window level of the car, they aren't going to be able to see what it is you're doing. And so I guess I don't know if that answers your question, but I guess I ponder a little with you.
All right. Thank you. Other questions, members? Would anyone like to testify on the A15 amendment? All right. All in favor of the Westrum A15, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion carries. Right. I saw Senator Rest's hand.
Yeah, four amendments.
Mr. Chairman, I have the A10 amendment, if it has been copied.
It has. Okay.
All right. Senator Rest offers the A10. Senator Rest, go ahead and start explaining it as it comes around.
Thank you, Chairman and members. I offer this on behalf of Senator Skoy. There is a highway project going through Red Lake, that Highway 1, and what this bill does, what this provision does is to allow and give authority to the Commissioner of Transportation to negotiate the terms with regard to construction of that highway. Without this, is my understanding, they either don't have it or it would be very difficult. Yep. And it is done under the federal under federal TERO, which in line 114 is the Tribal Employment Rights Ordinance. And the department can, this language comes at their request, and I hope that you will grant it. It just allows them, it's a technical language that allows them to do negotiating with the tribe in the construction of Highway 1, which goes through Red Lake.
Thank you. Questions on A10?
This might have been done. But it needs to go on page 61.
Senator Russ, I think we're going to have just a tiny little adjustment, a little technical amendment.
Actually, it's okay.
All right, never mind. All right, any questions? Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Rest, could I get a copy of the Tribal Employment Rights Ordinance?
Senator Rest, you have that in your briefcase, right?
I have it right here. Mr. Chairman and Senator Kiffmeyer, certainly don't have it with me, but somebody here from the department could explain further what it is. It is a federal, it's in the federal code, as far as I know. That's where it's coming from. It's not a state ordinance. It is a federal, requirement governing the relationships between state governments and the tribes when the state is doing some sort of project on the on tribal land. Yes? Kind of.
Why don't we invite the MnDOT to the table to help us understand a little bit better. Thanks. Mr. Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Scott Peterson from MnDOT. The Tribal Employment Rights Ordinance varies by tribe to some extent, but the similarity among them all is that we're allowed under federal law to provide a preference for Indian employment when we're doing construction projects on or near Indian reservations. And in the absence of available Indian workforce, we're also allowed to pay them a fee in order to substitute for the Indian employment goals in on the project. So there isn't simply just one ordinance, but they're very similar in that those are kind of the commonalities among them.
All right. Thank you. Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I'm just it's interesting here because, first of all, they're exempt from public law 83-280. That's one of the things they have to be is exempt from it. And yet we're quoting it. This tribal employment rights ordinance, usually if you have a federal law, there's a citation for federal law. This does not have that with the tribal employment rights ordinance. And an ordinance generally is a local ordinance, not something that is done by a federal government. But they're also exempt from public law as well. So I'm concerned here that we are tying the construction of these highways to this extent and has a concern for me very much. I'm not quite sure even what this still trying to figure out what it all means, so I feel uncomfortable even voting on this.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Rest.
Mr. Peterson said when they're building highways through through tribal lands, there are issues of sovereignty that come up, and this is a he can explain what public law 82-83-280 are, but they would be required to have a preference for the labor for these projects according to the federal law, or the if that doesn't work, they can negotiate a fee in lieu of that. Because it might be very difficult in some instances to be able to meet the percentage that they are of workers that they are required to have for these highway projects. So it gives them some flexibility in meeting the requirements for the federal law. And simply because it's called an ordinance doesn't take away from the fact that it's a federal requirement. But I would like to know what the concur in wanting to know what is, in general, what is public law 83-280, Mr. Peterson, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator, Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Rest, and Senator Kiffmeyer. Public law 83-280 is a law that extends the ability of the state to enforce laws on Indian reservations. It doesn't preclude the tribes from enforcing laws on their own reservations, but it gives the state some authority to enforce laws. When there are two tribes in Minnesota that are excluded, Red Lake was specifically cited in public law 280 when it was passed as being excluded from those provisions, and the Boys Fort Reservation was retroceded to an exempt status, which means after they had been included over time, the state agreed that it was really best if the tribe was responsible for law enforcement. And so because of that, the state has limited ability to enforce, for example, our contractual requirements for the state of Minnesota within the boundaries of the Red Lake Reservation. And as Senator Rest pointed out, we have a trunk highway that runs through the reservation, and the tribe is, I think, justifiably saying, you know, you're kind of in our nation now, and so we ask that you abide by our rules. When we go outside the boundaries of the reservation, we abide by the rules of the state of Minnesota, and so they really have a hard time understanding why we can't then contract with them on their terms. And, of course, we're bound by state procurement law and how we bid and award contracts. And so the reason that we cited Public Law 280 in the language is because those two reservations are the locations where we have this particular issue. Again, in other locations, we have more authority, and at this point, we haven't encountered this same issue. So that's basically what Public Law 280 does. It really restricts law, for example, law enforcement to the federal government within the boundaries of these Indian reservations.
So
Mr. Chairman and Senator Kiffmeyer, they, as you know, in a lot of instances, we describe things not directly. We say, you know, if something is located at the intersection of something or other and something or other, without saying its Joe's Grocery. This is, and I don't mean to make light of it, but this is describing precisely who, what tribe would be affected, because otherwise they're not part of, public law 83-280. And I do confess that my understanding of all of this is an inch deep and only 6 inches wide. Okay. But as I understand it, it's non-controversial. It just gives the department the ability to negotiate and makes it clear-cut that they may do this with regard to constructing or reconstructing Highway 1.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Right. Chairman.
Okay. Senator Newman and then Senator Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Peterson, if you could go down to line 1.15 through 1.7 of the 810 agreement indicates that the commissioner is authorized to enter into an agreement to provide funding for the state's share of the project. Is there or are there any rules or guidelines or criteria that have been established which either gives either a directive or guidelines to the commissioner as to what the state's share should be, or is it
the bill?
Up to the commissioner?
Mr.
Peterson.
Senator Newman, I think it's up to the commissioner. One of the reasons that this type of authority becomes important is because we, you know, we like to use our state funds where we can to, obviously, to repair roads and stuff, and federal funds are at a premium in many cases. And so we mix the funding between state and federal funding on projects to come up with what we think is the most efficient distribution and be able to fund the projects that we have, like, scheduled for any particular year.
Senator Newman.
So, Mr. Peterson, how would the commissioner go about making that determination as to what our share is going to be if there isn't any guidance that he is to be given? I mean, is it really and truly that open-ended that one individual would make that decision?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Peterson.
Senator Newman. Well, I don't know if it's one person. It's the department collectively, the people that manage our construction program that make those decisions. And in District 2, MnDOT District 2, where this is located, you know, they have a very limited amount of federal funds, and they don't actually have enough to do the project that Senator Rest mentioned. But again, it's, you know, I don't think that the mix of state and federal funds is so much of an issue, other than if it's all, like, if it's 100% federal funds, which we don't have the ability to do in 99% of the instances. There are other ways to fund projects on the Indian Reservation, but it's very cumbersome, it's very inefficient, and very time-consuming. And so in Minnesota, whether it's federal funds or state funds, it all goes into the Trunk Highway Fund. And so we try to spend the money where it's most efficient. For example, if we use federal funds on a project, a lot of times it requires more extensive, like, environmental review and other, there are other restrictions or other requirements associated with meeting federal transportation goals that have to be met. And so we, you know, again, we try to, and then we try to consolidate funds where we can, federal funds, excuse me, where we can, so we can kind of limit the amount that we have to, of that type of thing that we have to do. And again, this project, as I understand it, is primarily a resurfacing project with some bridge rehabilitation. And so in the opinion of our department folks, state funds are the most appropriate funding source for this particular project.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Peterson, I won't belabor the point, except to say that you have earlier described that you're building a road through another nation, and now have indicated that, in all likelihood, because that nation doesn't have sufficient funds to pay for the road, we're going to end up picking up most of the tab. It's almost a double standard. If I can put it that way. And I guess I'm just a little surprised that there is some kind of criteria in place which gives guidance to the commissioner as to how to spend state funds in another nation. But like I said, I'm not going to believe it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Peterson, so relating to this, reference to Indian-owned contractors, I see the commissioner, if this amendment were to go on, could pay up to 10% more than the next lowest bid in order to make sure this particular would get the work. Does this contractor, for example, would he be required to pay prevailing wage?
Mr. Peterson.
Senator Dibble and Mr. Chairman and the Senator Peterson. I don't believe so. I honestly hadn't thought about that. So I can't say for sure.
So Mr. Chair and members, to Senator Newman's point, I mean there's another point that's a double standard. Any other project would require those workers to be paid prevailing wage, and for some reason it's okay to pay them significantly less money because it's an Indian-owned contractor. The other question I have, so for example, like the MnDOT Environmental Office, you and I have had discussions about road grinding and slurry in the past. So I'm thinking of another example. Does the MnDOT Environmental Office review these projects, and are these contractors asked to operate under the same standards from the department's environmental office when they're building a road?
Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Peterson, we haven't actually built a project under this provision, obviously, yet, but certainly all the requirements in terms of the quality of construction, the type of materials, the construction methods, all those things, there would be standards enforced in that respect. In my experience, the environmental restrictions placed around our projects on Indian reservations are actually more strict than we have outside the Indian reservation.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Rest.
I've invited Senator Skoy to speak, if that's agreeable.
It is agreeable.
Thank you.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and appreciate Senator Rest offering this amendment for me. This is a provision that I've been working with the department on this session. It came to us late, so we couldn't get it drafted as a bill. But what the issue is Highway 1 crosses Red Lake Reservation. TARO is a federal requirement for work preference. We have had projects on Red Lake before where we've managed to work around some of these requirements by using Bureau of Indian Affairs authorities to contract with or work through the federal requirements. But with the rebuilding of Highway 1 and another bridge project, it's important that the commissioner be able to negotiate with Red Lake in order to get these highway projects accomplished, and we're giving the commissioner the authority to negotiate these provisions.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Senator Skoy, in the past, on past projects, can you give us an indication of so when you're saying negotiate, what I hear happening potentially is that contract may be awarded to somebody other than an Indian-owned contractor, but then there's a payment made to that Indian-owned contractor or the reservation in lieu of using that contractor with those types of qualifications laid out. Is that accurate? Or?
Senator Skoy.
Mr. Chair and Senator Peterson, it's a federal requirement, and so we need to conform to that. In other projects, the other bridge project that I'm aware of, there were some federal dollars that were flowing into that project, so they flowed through the Bureau of Indian Affairs, and that's how we achieved conformity with TARO. I believe this is accurate. I see nodding from the gentleman next to me. This project doesn't have those federal dollars, so we don't have that way to achieve federal conformity. So we're allowing the commissioner to negotiate with Red Lake to reach conformity with the federal TARO requirement. We want to make sure that we follow, that there's a mechanism in place to ensure that the bid is competitive, and that's part of what the language is doing here.
Senator Peterson.
So, Mr. Chair and Senator Scoy, then, is that one of the solutions, then, is a payment in lieu of using an Indian-owned contractor, you know, to the reservation or to that contractor, and then MnDOT would award it to somebody else, or?
Mr. Chair and Senator Peterson, I apologize. I don't have the language in front of me, and maybe the department would be better prepared to speak if that's one of the options or not.
Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Peterson, in the case of Red Lake is the only tribe in Minnesota that has its own contracting company. So they have Red Lake Builders. So potentially they could get the contract, and we could contract directly with them for the construction of the road. And as I mentioned, they'd be in our negotiation. We'd make sure that we're allowed to ensure that the product that is constructed meets all of our specifications. If that is not possible, if we for some reason that we can't reach agreement with Red Lake, or maybe they don't want to take the job, then we can pay them the TARO fee in lieu of.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you. So, Mr. Chair and Mr. Peterson, so is that similar to right now? I'm aware of, so for example, on another state project that has state money involved in the Viking Stadium, there's a woman-owned business that is buying much of the building materials, marking it up, and then reselling it to the contractors that are actually installing that product in order to meet the disadvantaged business requirement on the Viking Stadium, for example. So is this program similar to that, where we're looking to get funding to, in this case, an Indian-owned contractor that's local to that area?
Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Peterson, you know, I don't know what program requirements are attached to the Viking Stadium. You know, there's a state targeted group business program that MnDOT also participates in, and that could be what binds them. But because of the, you know, the multiple parties that are involved in that project, I'm just not sure what it is. This would not be a case, so at least in my opinion, where a supplier who might be an Indian-owned company could buy materials and then resell them to the contractor or the band at a higher price. That's a situation that I have not heard that we've ever experienced.
Senator Scoy wanted to respond.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Peterson and committee members. The Red Lake Band uses these dollars for workforce development primarily. They use these to find ways to bring job skills to their members so that they can get work on these projects. Red Lake, the unemployment rate is approaching 50%. The effort that the band is putting forth to bring employment is commendable. This is part of their initiative. The money's not used other than for the development of workforce for people to actually do work on these projects. That would be from my conversations with Red Lake what the purpose of the TARO monies are.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Scoy, and I don't want to be overcritical if that's the way I'm coming across. I'm just trying to understand how the project would get done. And so an example I can think of that maybe relates specifically to road construction. So, Mr. Peterson, in this case, the Red Lake contracting would likely end up being the prime on this road project, and then they would hire a road builder to do the actual work. So the Red Lake contracting would be the general contractor or the prime contractor that would be responsible for making the payments to the to the subcontractors? Is that how it may flow?
Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Peterson, my understanding is that Red Lake Builders is actually capable of doing most of the work. The bridge project that Senator Scoie referred to that we have experience with before, they did hire some subcontractors to help them with that because they're not as qualified in bridge construction as they are in road building. That's my understanding. So in the end, I imagine there would be some subcontracting, but as Senator Scoie said, that their primary interest is providing employment for their tribal members, and so that's one of the major drivers for them wanting to do it this way.
Senator Peterson.
So, Mr. Chair, last question. So, Senator Scoie, it appears that this contracting firm feels that they're in danger of losing this project, for example, because this amendment would allow the commissioner to pay up to 10% more than the next lowest or competitive bid. Are they concerned they may lose this bid to another local contractor? Is that it, or the purpose of this amendment?
Mr. Chair,
Senator Scoie.
Senator Peterson, this was not brought to me by a contractor. This was brought to me by the chair of the Red Lake Nation. His concern was that these federally required provisions be followed, and that he would have resources that he could use to do workforce development so members that he represents would be able to have jobs on these projects that are going through their lands. Red Lake is one of two reservations in the nation that is not signatories on, I'm going to forget the name, 280 law. So they have a totally closed reservation. There has to be negotiation between MnDOT and the band in order to do the project, and part of that negotiation is this TARO provision.
Great, thank you.
Senator Newman.
Mr. Peterson, on the basis of your, the answer to your prior questions, and on the basis of the questions that Senator Peterson has been raising, it would be possible under this amendment that the state of Minnesota would fund 100% of the cost as its share, and in addition pay Red Lake a certain sum of money to administer the construction contract. Would that be correct? That would be possible.
Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Newman, that would be possible, I would imagine.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Anything further on the A-19 amendment? Senator Westrom.
Mr. Chair, kind of related to that.
Oh, I'm sorry, A-10.
Related to that language, if you look at the 10% overage allowance, then it says, or the commissioner may negotiate what's reasonable. I'm not sure I'm following what's reasonable. How would they negotiate such a thing, Mr. Peterson? Could they just negotiate something that's within 25% of what is customary, something that's only 90% of normal bids? Where would they cut it off at reasonable?
Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Westrom, I think the reasonable is tied to what would be like a fair price for the project when we pursue contracts for our other construction contracts. We put them out for bid, mm-hmm. and because of the competitive market that creates, we have a reasonable idea of what the best, the right price for a project is. In this case, where we would not be putting a project out for bid, where we'd actually be direct selecting a contractor, obviously it creates a different situation. So our intent would be to get an independent authority to provide a reliable cost estimate, and that, in our view, would be kind of the point at which you'd establish basically a reasonable price, and then we'd have to negotiate with the band or the contractor and decide, what else might be included and what services MnDOT might provide, or ask the tribe to add on to the contract beyond the actual construction, for example, construction inspection kinds of things. Again, and then we would, there might be other features that have to be in there, but that, in my view, that's where the reasonable price comes in.
And thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Peterson. So that would be in the event they just want to directly contract and not do a bid process. Is that what that's for?
Mr.
Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Westrom, that's correct.
And so, Mr. Chair, Mr. Peterson,
Senator Westrom,
you made a comment earlier, and I saw the term here in the amendment, Terrell. What was the word you used? Terrell?
Terrell, yeah.
What is that, and what's that for again?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator, Mr. Peterson.
Senator Westrom, Terrell is transferred tribal employment rights ordinance. And so this is, again, common to all the Indian reservations. So the 10% would be, a payment in lieu of hiring tribal members on the project, for example, if we couldn't meet the.
So explain that a little
Senator Westrom.
Further. Mr. Chairman, thank you. So let's walk through a hypothetical. And for the illustration, Senator Scoy, maybe you know, Is there just one road contractor that is from the Red Lake Indian Reservation? Is that basically what we're talking about, or is there multiple?
Mr. Chair and Senator Western, Senator, I think it's one. It's Red Lake Builders. And members, let me just kind of lay this out a little bit. Minnesota wants to rebuild Highway 1. The people who live along Highway 1 on Red Lake also want to get the highway rebuilt. So they have joint interests in getting the highway rebuilt, but they also want to be compliant with the requirements of these ordinances. So we're trying to find language that would allow the commissioner to fulfill the requirements of Minnesota to have a fair mechanism for establishing the cost, while at the same time having job and work employment in Red Lake. We worked with the department to draft this language. It seems pretty reasonable. It fulfills the requirements, I think, for the state to have an understanding that the amount of money spent for the project is going to be reasonable and fair, while at the same time employing members of the Red Lake Nation, hopefully, to work on the project. And that's the goal.
And Mr. Chair,
Senator Westrom.
Senator Scoy, thank you for that. What, Mr. Peterson? What I'm seeing though is, so if you can't negotiate, or the estimate from the Red Lake Nation contractor would come in more than 10%, you would then go to a different contractor that's bid the project. Is that correct,
Mr. Chairman?
Senator, Mr. Peterson.
As Senator Westrom. I don't think so. I mean, I don't think that Red Lake would allow us to go in there and repair the road with a different contractor unless we met the requirements that are specified in this provision. Again, we don't have the authority to go in there. Our options at that point would be to possibly turn the road over to the band and relocate the trunk highway outside the boundaries of the reservation.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Westrom, I think the result of that would be that the project wouldn't happen.
And so, Mr. Chair, Senator Scoy, the road would just stay as it is, bumpy or whatever the falter of it is currently?
Mr. Chair, Senator Washington, that would be my guess. The road really doesn't have shoulders. It doesn't have ditches on a lot of it. Through the city of Red Bee, there's just dirt edges at the same grade as the city. It's pretty much in need of a major redo. They've done all the sewer and water work along the edges of it, getting ready for the redo. But without some kind of agreement between MnDOT and Red Lake, it's going to sit there for a while. We're trying to move it forward. I think there's one more bridge project to be rebuilt, and then in the next number of years, they're going to start rebuilding Highway 1. If we're unable to reach accommodations, it'll delay longer.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Scoy, I'm a little familiar with that area. Are we talking the main road that goes from Bemidji up towards Baudette? Is that
Mr. Chair and Senator Westrom, no, that's Highway 89. Highway 1 is the road that runs east and west through the Red Lake Reservation.
Okay, east and west, not north
runs
and south.
East and west, not north and south.
Okay.
Part of 1 and 89 are on the same roadway for maybe a dozen miles or so, but the primary road, Highway 1, is east and west, and 89 primarily is north and south.
Okay. So, Mr. Chair, Mr. Peterson, I...
Senator Westrom.
And Senator Skoy, whichever one of you want to answer this. So, but what I read from this is the project would, we would give a 10% buffer to it with language to contract with the Red Lake tribal contractor, and they would then take over the project, but they may use subcontractors out of on the reservation or off the reservation. Is that kind of it in a nutshell?
Peters.
Do you want me to? Mr. Chair and Senator Westrom, yeah, I think as Mr. Peterson indicated, for bridge work, they don't have probably quite the capabilities of others, so they might subcontract some of the bridge work. They have scrapers and cats and road building equipment and graders and dump trucks and semis, and so my expectation is a lot of the road work they would be able to do. Remember, the 10% goes, from my understanding of what I was informed, the 10% really goes to the band for workforce development, doesn't go to the contractor.
And Mr. Chair, Senator
Westrom,
how does the 10% go to their... It looks to me like the bid just can be over 10, up to 10% over, and the commissioner can contract, but maybe I'm reading it wrong.
Mr. Chair and Senator Westrom, I'll have to get you that information. I don't know that today. Maybe Mr. Peterson can help me there.
Yeah. We're going to start calling you Peter Skoy. Mr. Peter Skoy.
Good Scandinavian names.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Westrom, the TARO is for, is basically, it refers to workforce either development, so the requirement is to either hire Indian folks to work on the project or to pay the band in lieu of hiring those folks to work on the project.
Okay, so Mr. Chair and Senator Mr. Peterson, if you work with them to do the project with up to 10% overage allowance, you'd basically be hiring citizens or residents or members of the Red Lake tribe, and then you wouldn't be making a lieu of payment. Otherwise, you'd make a lieu of payment.
Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Westrom, you know, I think all of that would be part of the negotiation. Again, the way I view it, the way I understand it is, you know, we're going into the Red Lake Nation and... You know, they have certain objectives they'd like to meet coming out of a construction project like that. So if they insist upon some kind of payment for workforce development that might be over and above what we'd pay someplace else, that might be something that we would consider. Again, since we've never been into a negotiation like this, it's kind of hard to project how it might turn out. But it doesn't seem out... like completely unthinkable that that would happen.
Mr. Chair, I think this is my last question. Mr. Peterson, what kind of miles are we talking here, and what kind of project cost are we talking about when we start talking payments in lieu and 10% overage? Are we talking, I assume it's in the, that's in the millions, it might be $20, $30, $40 million. Do you have an idea?
Mr. Chair and Senator Westrom, I'm not going to have the exact mileage, but I'm going to guess it's between 20 and 25 miles of road. And I think there's a bridge to be rebuilt yet, so there would be some dollars there. I don't know what the project cost would be for that. But as I mentioned, it's pretty extensive grade redevelopment because a lot of it doesn't have grade as you would think of in a normal highway road. So there will be grade development done.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Peterson.
If it would be helpful, we could provide some more detailed information on how the TARO works, just so members are comfortable with that part of it. I mean, when you get into this area where, you know, Indian law interacts with state law, it gets to be kind of confusing. It's completely out of the ordinary for most of us. So if that would be helpful, we'd be happy to do that.
Thank you. That would be helpful.
Mr. Chair, I think that would be helpful. And if Mr. Peterson could get us some cost estimates of what they envision or foresee projects costing for this rebuild, that would be helpful as well.
That would be helpful as well. Thank you. Anything further, members?
Before Finance Committee?
Finance Committee is on Thursday.
Oh.
I think our report.
Well, this policy doesn't go through finance, does it?
Mr. Chair? Senator Westrum, yeah. At this point, it does have to move back up through finance because we're in the finance division procedurally.
Yep.
So, you know, so it has to stop off there, so we might as well. And are we moving it on Thursday? So I think we're handling it on Thursday. Senator Peterson, do you have something?
No.
All right. Anything further on the A-10? All right. Senator Rest renews her motion, the A-10 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed no?
No.
Motion carries. Thank you. So other amendments, members?
I sure am glad I didn't bring the controversial one.
Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have the A-22 amendment.
Senator Carlson offers the A-22.
Yes. I'll speak about it while it's being passed out. The A-22 amendment, I am actually handling that on behalf of Senator Hoffman. And it was originally Senate File 1136. And it deals with the language in some signs that are related to people who need increased access. We all know that words and images matter. They're deceptive, have meaning, and are full of intended and often unintended consequences. We also know that so often our self-image can be impacted positively and negatively by those words and images. 25 years ago, the passage of the Americans with Disabilities Act prohibited discrimination against people with disabilities in employment, transportation, public accommodation, communications, and governmental activities. For the first time, the move towards people first language has been acknowledged and formalized by the ADA Act. In 2005, legislation was passed by the legislature ordering that signage be changed to get rid of the old, inappropriate, and hurtful words such as handicapped, disabled, and more. The A-22 amendment adds to the policy bill, the language, and I'll just give you a slight amount of it here. The owner of the parking of a parking facility that it – I'm sorry, I'm on the wrong –
No, you are. You're right.
No, that's right. The owner of a parking facility that's owned or wholly leased by the state or by a private entity that receives monetary aid from the state shall, beginning July 1st, 2019 – in the ordinary course of sign modification replacement, modify or replace the sign so that it displays a form of the word accessible or with the state symbol indicating buildings that as adopted by the Rehabilitation International's 11th World Congress and does not display a form of the word handicapped, disabled, or disability. So, members, I offer this, and I'll stand for questions.
Chairman?
Thank you, Senator Carlson. Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Senator Carlson, for bringing this amendment. I know that this has got a lot of attention when Senator Hoffman's daughter testified. This has been a project she's worked on this issue, and I think it is what's great about it is that it's not a dramatic thing that says change all your signs right now. It's saying starting on July 1st of 2019, as signs need to be replaced, that they be done with appropriate signs that indicate that the parking space is accessible or some such word rather than, as you pointed out, that this is for the handicapped or the disabled or disability. So I hope members will enthusiastically support Senator Carlson's amendment.
All right. Thank you. Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I support the underlying policy here. It's the positive side of saying something is accessible rather than a personal statement about a particular situation. So that's good. My puzzlement, though, is since you're going to, in the ordinary course of sign modification and replacement, and you're going to give them that as they wear out, as they need to be replaced, then you do this, why wait until July 1, 2019? That is 4 years from now. It seems like others who may be in this situation of modifying and replacing or doing some of that, is there a particular reason that we're waiting 4 years to start it?
Senator Kiffmeyer, yes, I think that's we're trying to double, triple avoid a fiscal implication, particularly in the, you know, in the present and the tails biennium. So even though we're saying in the normal course of, if we delay the effective date, you know, hopefully they'll do it anyways.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kiffmeyer, there's nothing that prevents any public parking facility that's owned by a local government or a parking facility that is supported by state government to make these changes ahead of time, and certainly we would hope that they would. But in order not to have it be an unfunded mandate, if you will, to start with, this is or this is how I understand the thing, and in relative to what Senator Chairman Dibble indicated, and it avoids the fiscal note for this at this point. Is that correct, Mr. Chairman?
Senator, that's correct. Yeah, Senator Kiffmeyer.
Well, Mr. Chair, first of all, there's no money appropriated here, no matter what. So it seems like a language that is superfluous because there is no money. And secondly, it contradicts in some ways when you say in the normal course of process, they're going to have to expend this money. Even if they replaced the same sign with the same sign, that's still a local expense. I don't see why we should have to give them grant money to do what they were going to do anyway.
They're not.
And did that, or just said the normal course of events, replace them with something that has a version of accessible, I don't think there's any need to give them grants when they are already going to replace in the normal course.
That's a good point, Senator Kiffmeyer. I mean, we could strike lines that last sentence if you think that's appropriate.
And then Mr. Chair, you could start it in 2015 and get this thing rolling a little bit better. I think that Senator Hoffman's daughter would appreciate knowing that it's actually going to make some progress here, and I think it gives plenty of leeway on the local level to have plenty of flexibility for this as without that sentence and then start earlier.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Ress.
Senator Carlson, how would you feel about that suggestion of starting at line 112, starting with the word the, delete the, and then delete lines 13, 14, and 15, and then make a change to the effective date? Senator Kiffmeyer, is that what you're looking at too?
And 1.8, you'd also need to change that.
Wait, what? 1.16.
Hmm? 1.8 and 1.16 both have dates on them.
And 1.8.
The one in the sentence. Sorry, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Carlson.
Mr. Chair, and Senators Rest and Kiffmeyer, I think that would be great. The only quibble I'd have, we do have the shall. Up on 1.7, and I'm not sure if the shall, if we start out with the shall at this early stage, is that an appropriate word to use there?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Carlson, we certainly don't want may, but certainly Senator Kiffmeyer, I think July 1 of 2015 might be a little early. What about saying beginning July 1 of 2016?
Mr. Chair, I think it does say shall, but it says shall, skipping the date, shall in the ordinary course of sign modification replacement do so. Then it's only then that the shall takes effect. So but it seems to me that the shall is only if in the ordinary course you're going to modify or replace it.
It seemed to me that what we might hear, however, is that there is an inventory of these signs right now that would then have to be thrown out and not used up. And I think that was part of the July 2019 as well, that we're not trying to put a cost on these facilities to discard signs that have already been, I don't even know who makes them, but that they would have to throw out their inventory because they could no longer use them. I think we do that. We certainly have done that with when we are, well, what I recall is the prohibition of children's personal products of formaldehyde. There were delayed effective dates, and retailers were not required to throw product out. It was used up, and then after a certain date, that product could not be sold. So I think it's that same kind of approach, and we do that other places too, where we say once the existing supply has been used, that no further signs like that can be produced. And I think that's the spirit behind the delayed effective date, although I'm certainly willing to have it earlier, but I would be careful about undue costs that could not be recovered. That's all.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you. I think that's a more valuable qualifier than a date, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I think in having this discussion, shall, after exhausting current supply in the ordinary course, I think could be more beneficial both ways. I think Ms. Bereshofsky might have a suggestion after our conversation.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Carlson.
I'm also thinking of, this talks about ordinary course of sign modification replacement. Installation? I'm thinking of a parking ramp that's about a couple of hundred feet away from us here that is going to be putting in some of these signs as a matter of a new building. Mm-hmm. So new installation ought to be expected to be, if they're not ordered, if they're not sitting there waiting to be put in, there should be an out there. If they are not ordered, then they should actually bear the new name, the new words.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Carlson, one of the things I'm going to do, maybe not this afternoon, but tomorrow morning, is to check with that and make sure that that
I
doesn't happen.
Making progress.
And we don't use old-fashioned signs there.
Mm-hmm.
Not acceptable. Senator Kiffmeyer, you agree?
Oh, absolutely.
There you go.
Mr. Chair, yes.
So can Ms. Bereshofsky fix it?
She's a Wonder Woman, of course.
Ms. Bereshofsky, and she had another suggestion, too, that might help us out.
Well, Mr. Chair, the other suggestion that I had was to have an earlier effective date and then on 1.8 a little bit more lead time for the implementation so that the sign companies could gear up and so on with the earlier effective date. It would certainly be possible to make to refer to installation of new signs as well as being subject to this requirement. As far as the existing inventory, I mean, that might thwart Senator Rest's desire to have the compliance signs installed in the new building parking ramp. And perhaps MnDOT could comment as to whether there is an inventory of signs and what problems that might bring up.
Favorite person, Mr. Peterson? Mm,
yeah. Or is it DPS that does that?
Or admin. Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know if we have I know that the signs that we do use are the compliant signs. I mean, they would comply with these provisions. So whatever we do have in stock, but you know, my understanding with these smaller standardized signs is, you know, we procure a certain amount on a regular basis, and when the inventory is exhausted, we reorder them. But that's the extent of my knowledge on this topic.
All right, Senator Westrum, and then Senator Sanders.
Mr. Chair, I think the Senate office building could be its own subdivision if we just want to be clear with our intent on that. But MnDOT wouldn't be the one providing for parking ramps on the Capitol grounds, or would they? Would that not be admin or somebody else?
Contractor.
Senator Rest would know.
Senator Rest, do you know?
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to find out. I wonder if a solution here might be for Senator Kiffmeyer and I and Senator Carlson, anybody else who's interested, to work with Ms. Berezovsky before finance and get this right and have it, since this bill is going to go up to the full committee.
Right.
I think there would be generally enthusiastic support for this, but we'll get the language right rather than trying to work on this amendment. If that would be agreeable to Senator Carlson, that he could withdraw the amendment and the three of us could work with whoever we need to work with to get something going that will work.
Senator Rest, why don't we adopt the amendment
and then
so it gets into the report. Yeah, and then bring a change into
finance. Okay with me, if it's okay with you.
Mr. Chair. Right.
Senator Westrum.
Additional. One clarification I do want to check, and I had to step out for a bit, and maybe you covered it, Senator Carlson. Does this apply to just public parking, and are we – is this going to also be affecting all businesses, big and small, going forward? What's your intent there?
Yeah, Senator Carlson.
Mr. Chair and Senator Westrum, the bill says that it's a facility that's owned or wholly leased by the state or a private entity that receives any monetary aid from the state. But I suspect, and that's one of the questions that I have that I would like to look into, is that we have a consistent design of the sign. We refer to this Rehabilitation International's 11th World Congress, which I suspect there must be an accepted design of a sign, because our signs today came from somewhere. They aren't just the will and the whim of whatever architect has put them together. So I think that there will be, maybe the state will lead on providing artwork for a sign design, and then you'd see it across the state as architects design it in and signs are replaced.
And Mr. Chair and Senator Carlson, I read the language you have, and it does look like it's buildings or property owned by the states. But that second clause where it says, I'm trying to think of the money part, and so I'm trying to think of somebody owned a strip mall that the state maybe put some money into infrastructure, or an apartment building that received some tenants maybe received Section 8 vouchers or state dollars Does that hook them in, or would those businesses basically by default, as they would change out sign, the next sign they would order, whether it be 2 years from now or 10 years from now, when their sign is wore out or unrecognizable, they would just buy the sign because that's what's present at the time?
Mr. Chairman, I'll yeah. find out.
Senator Rest will find out.
Okay. And I raise that issue because I guess I'm on board with Senator Kiffmeyer and Senator Carlson and Rest with this effort. I would be concerned about having an unintended consequence or expense to small businesses or businesses that do replace these or maybe have some signs by their business, but for no other reason, it's the word, but it might still be in good shape for several more years. And so I'd like us to address that. I think your bill mostly covers that, or amendment covers that, but I raise that issue as we adopt this with the idea that we'll tweak it.
Senator Carlson, did you want to remove the last sentence in the paragraph there that starts at line 12?
Mr. Chair, yes. I believe that we all agree that should go. So we can remove that and then address the other language when we finalize the wording.
Okay, so you'll incorporate that into your proposed amendment.
Sure.
So we'll vote on the A22 without, or should we vote to take that sentence? Why don't we just vote to take that sentence out? So all in favor of removing the last sentence that begins on line 12 and goes through line 15, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion carries. And then the A22 as amended, with the understanding that we'll work on some of these items that we discussed in time for Finance Committee on Thursday. All in favor of the A22 as amended, say aye.
Aye.
Sorry. Senator Sendrum.
Not to dwell 30 seconds longer, but the people doing the homework probably ought to check with ADA law. I don't know, you know, what our latitude there is from a federal perspective. What about federal property and signs there? And then what I really wanted to say is, you know, the light rail's got sections within it, or if you will, handicap zones. So do buses, other situations that maybe should be looked at.
That's a good point.
All right. Thank you. All right. All in favor of the A22 as amended, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carries. Thank you. All right. Other amendments. I have an amendment. Senator Kent.
I'll offer
the A17 amendment.
Senator Dibble offers the A17.
So, members, the short description is this would add to the study that and report that the Department of Public Safety is undertaking that's due to us in 2017 on oil transportation. It would add ethanol transportation to that. Members, this was brought to me by one of my House members. It's frankly in response to the announcement by TC&W that they're going to be hauling and are already hauling ethanol in the Kenilworth corridor, where we now know that freight rail is going to stay. It's not going to go back to St. Louis Park, where, you know, opposite of state law that says that freight rail was going to go back to St. Louis Park at some time, but now it's been, I guess, decided that the freight rail is going to go through that very narrow corridor adjacent to residential within just a few feet. Literally, you could almost touch the houses that these ethanol trains are going to go past. And so it just seemed to make sense that that we just consider ethanol, you know, as an explosive hazardous substance going through our residential areas in the same way that we're considering oil transportation through our dense residential areas. I do need to make an oral amendment to restore the due date to 2017. So I would restore 2017 on line 5. And eliminate the new language on line 6, 2016. That eliminates any fiscal implications. Otherwise, if we made it more aggressive, I'm told it would cost, in terms of deadline, it would cost another $100,000. And we don't want to do this. Otherwise, it would just simply kind of folding ethanol into this consideration wouldn't cost the agency any additional money. They just will consider that as well. So I offer the A17 amendment with that modification.
Members, any questions or comments on the A-17? Senator Sindrum?
Well, you know, okay, you know, I can support this, but this is a never-ending list. I mean, we could add chlorine, we could add anhydrous ammonia, we could add, I don't know, corn syrup, we could go on and on and on. It seems, you know, the departments generally have all hazard plans and react according to whatever the agent spilled. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know where we end with this, but it's a good thing, but it seems to me they ought to prepare for anything that's on the railroad track as opposed to specific substances.
Senator Dibble. Senator, well, actually, it's a good point, Senator Sindrum, and actually chlorine and some of those other kind of chemical hazardous materials have had a great deal of study and analysis, but ethanol and the Bakken oil haven't had that similar kind of scrutiny and special consideration.
Senator Westrum, and then I believe we have some testifiers.
Madam Chair, good. I would like to hear from testifiers. Maybe this is okay. I'm not with you yet. To just add ethanol all of a sudden, I guess I'm just concerned about unintended or unknown ramifications on this issue. We've got ethanol plants in our state. The last 10 years have been ups and downs for them, and I just wouldn't want this to have some problem. And what we've done to haul ethanol so far, I'm not aware of any significant problems, and so I guess I'd be just concerned doing it without having more input and knowledge. But I'll wait for the testifiers.
Senator Westrum, all this would do is it would analyze preparedness and impacts to public safety from ethanol transportation, as we're doing for oil. Identify recommendations and actions to prevent incidents. Develop strategies for resident education. Recommend minimum liability insurance requirements for shippers and carriers. And develop equipment requirements for first responders having jurisdiction along those corridors. And quite honestly, my residents are quite concerned. This knowledge that ethanol is going to be going within feet of their homes where they live. And it would be pretty important to have this information in hand.
And Madam Chair, Mr.
Senator Westrum.
Senator Dibble, where was the push for this amendment all of a sudden? Is it from just your neighborhood area, or is there a group out there pushing this? Does the ethanol industry themselves know about this?
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Westrum, as I said, it came, the initiation of the idea came in conversation with my House member, concern rising out of, you know, the introduction of ethanol trains into a very narrow corridor where there haven't been residential corridor where they haven't been ethanol trains before.
Mr. Abbott, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is John Appitz. Pardon me, I'm with the law firm of Messerly and Kramer, and I represent the Minnesota Regional Railroads Association, the short lines, and a number of the Class 1s that operate here in the state of Minnesota. Just two quick things I'd like to say to the amendment offered by Senator Dibble. First of all, railroads are common carriers, and that means that as a common carrier, we are required to carry what it is that we are able to carry, what it is that we're delivered to. So if we go to some place and they have a carload of ethanol, a carload of corn, a carload of beans, a carload of rice or bricks, that is something that we have to carry. And we do, because that's our obligation. Railroads have been criticized recently for doing that because we make money doing that. We're required to do that. Just set that sort of bottom line. Secondly, we don't criticize the amendment, and certainly if you want to go forward with this, this is an extension, as I can tell from the studies that we were doing last year. The railroad agreed to work with the Department of Public Safety to do these particular studies on oil transport in the state of Minnesota. I think what one needs to question, though, is what we're going to do with this information once we have it. Most of the recommendations would have to be recommendations implemented not by the state of Minnesota, but because most of the regulation of railroads is done by the federal government and federal agencies, they would be the ones that would actually be would implement these sorts of recommendations, if at all. For instance, the examination of alternative routes is something that the U.S. Department of Transportation is involved with. Co-location of passenger and rail operations is something that the Federal Railroad Administration and the Surface Transportation Board would be involved with. Education strategies for resident education is certainly something the state can do, and it's something we would obviously participate in, and railroads do a great deal of already. Recommendation for minimum insurance requirements, again, is a USDOT and a Surface Transportation Board area of jurisdiction. So I just raise that. I don't quite understand the purpose here, but I need to just throw in the caveat so that people understand that once we have this information, the question would be what necessarily we do with it. And I'll just kind of leave it at that, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Abbott.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll renew my motion.
All right. Any additional comments or questions, members? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A17 amendment as revised, please say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails.
Senator Jensen. Senator Jensen has the A21 amendment. All right. Oh, yes, this. I forgot about that. Go ahead and start describing it, and I think we have someone who here is able to speak to it a little bit more.
Markings on the vehicle in the form of a police shield, a star, or any such emblem that is typically associated with a marked law enforcement vehicle. There has been a situation in Goodwin County where someone is responsible for doing this, and there's no recourse currently. So I do need to do, and I'm not sure, Mr. Chair, I need some directions. There's a moral amendment I need to make to the amendment. I'm not sure how I need to proceed with that.
Go ahead and describe what changes you need
the
to make.
The oral amendment is on line 2.25 to remove, after the period on that line, a violation of this paragraph is a misdemeanor, because we would have to go to judiciary to adopt that language.
Whole chill passes through.
We send them stuff all the time.
Senator Resta.
Actually, Mr. Chairman and Senator Jensen, even if you didn't have that language violation, and I now yield to Senator Newman on this, but violations of laws are violations of laws, whether you say at what level it is or not. There's a common understanding of that. But I mean, fine to take it out, to delete it, but it doesn't make a violation of it any less a violation of the law.
The default would be a misdemeanor.
The question I would have, unless you want to act on her deletion first, but then I do have a question,
okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Why don't we vote to delete a violation of this paragraph as a misdemeanor on line 2.25. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, no. Motion carries. Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, I would be if this is something, Senator Jensen, that people are doing now, thinking that it is legal, it would seem to me that we would want to give them a little bit of time to make sure that they are not displaying these things, so that they're not caught unawares in a violation of the law. So I would hope that we would, put in a specific effective date for, violations occurring after such and such a date, and maybe not as quickly as July 1 of 2015, maybe December 31st of July 2015, so that if anybody is doing this now, they'll have some time to correct their behavior.
Senator Jensen.
Thank you. Someone here to talk.
All right. Great. Okay, and then we'll see about the effective
making
date.
Making an effective date issue.
This comes, members. I've had discussion a couple of times with Senator Schmidt, and this is in response to a specific, pretty bad problem that's going on with a particular individual, down in his neck of the woods, Mr. Franklin.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Jim Franklin, Executive Director for the Sheriff's Association. I was just recently made aware of this particular situation. Let me give you just a brief snapshot of history to put this in context. As you know, we in law enforcement have worked with private security to get the proper identification in the statutes in 16998 and again in the current statute that deals with 626 with uniforms. We've been very successful working collaboratively together for quite some time. As you may know, in a bail bonds type situation where somebody absconds or does not appear, there is oftentimes a warrant issued for that person. And you've all probably seen the TV programs where somebody on bail bond is out picking up someone. Let's be clear, it's the old bail bond, you go find them, you get a reward and a fee, and it's a finder's fee for apprehending that person and bringing it in. We've not experienced this problem in Minnesota for a long, long time. Wisconsin has recently incurred a similar type situation, and in fact, the individual or individuals who were involved in Wisconsin have moved across to Minnesota because Wisconsin enacted a similar statute to what you have here that covers bail bondsmen and makes and they purport or appear to dress like and look like uniformed law enforcement officers. We've had several examples where information was given to them by private citizens thinking they were given information to law enforcement officers, which raises all kinds of questions with regards to data privacy and all kinds of interpretations. And when we looked at the statute of how to charge this out and what to do and how to investigate it, we ran into the fact that bail bondsmen are not private security or security guards and would not qualify under existing statute. Hence, Senator Schmidt has come forward with this particular bill to try to address this particular situation with a very small, particular one or two people, and we think it's a very narrow focus. We agree, give some time to deal with this situation. We think it will self-correct, and in all probability, perhaps this person will move on to South Dakota. But we're not sure what will happen. But like I say, we're trying to address this with a minute change in the statute that we think is appropriate to deal with this situation under these circumstances.
Thank you, Mr. Franklin. Questions, members? Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, my initial thought is that to try and help Senator Jensen out, I don't think you stated from judiciary. I think this falls squarely within the jurisdiction of judiciary. And in particular, I don't know if we're getting into bad privacy or not, but this certainly seems to me would be something that we would review in judiciary. And I would tell you that, I would much prefer to see a bill and a full committee hearing, full discussion on it. Secondly, I don't know what an emblem that is typically associated with a marked law enforcement vehicle may or may not be. It's a very vague, ambiguous statement, and I don't know if that, it just isn't specific or identifiable enough for me. I would not be in favor of that kind of language. I have a pretty good idea what a police shield looks like. I have a pretty good idea what a sheriff's star looks like on a motor vehicle. But an emblem that is typically associated with a marked vehicle, I do not. Just as a matter of suggestion, maybe if you're having trouble with a particular individual, there's got to be licensing
provisions that would come into play when it comes to a bail enforcement agent or a bondsman that perhaps you could look at rather than going this route. But as written, Senator Johnson, without having this matter go through the Judiciary Committee, I would not be in a position to support it.
So, Senator Newman, I do know that Senator Schmidt did have a conversation with Senator Latz today on the floor and indicated that with the removal of this language, Senator Latz didn't think he needed to see the language. But if we learn differently, if this amendment goes in, it's coming out. Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It seems like we're making this a little bit overcomplicated. I mean, we already have provisions here that say security guards may be any other color than specified by peace officers. We've defined bail bondsman and bail enforcement agent. I don't know why they can't fit up under the same sentence. But along with Senator Newman, I mean, if we start saying that bail bondsmen can't use shields or sheriff stars, then what do we do about, I'm just thinking through some of the home security services, ADI or whoever. I mean, are we holding those folks out because those are typically associated with law enforcement? So I don't have a disagreement necessarily with the goal of this amendment. It's just it doesn't feel like it's ready to be placed on this bill.
Anything further, members? All right. Senator Rest, you look poised like you want to say something. You still wanted to deal with the effective date?
Yeah, I'm going to vote.
All right. All right. So all in favor of the A21 as amended, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no?
No.
Motion does not prevail. All right. Anything further, members? All right. With that, Senator Kent, would you like to move the bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I would like to move Senate File 1647 as amended to be recommended to pass and re-referred
to finance.
Finance?
Yep. Yep. We're in division. All right. On the Kent motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion
no.
carries.
Mr. Chair, isn't this a policy bill? Why would it go to finance?
Because we're in the finance division.
Yeah, it was hurt. Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed,
we
no.
Just will?
What?
Motion carries.
What?
We've only got kind of interrupted in the middle.
Resounding support.
Make sure. Really passes.
We had better luck the first time.
Senator Peterson.
Yeah, so Mr. Chair, I was just asking for some clarification. We'll have both this policy bill and finance transportation bill on Thursday in finance. Is what the plan is.
Senator Peterson, well, for sure the finance bill, and we're pretty sure this bill as well.
Okay.
We'll confirm that. And then members, Senator Newman had asked for the Met Council to come forward on the scofflaw issue, the non-payment, and I had made that assurance. So at some point we'll get back to that in our spare time as the session winds down. We'll have an informational hearing for those who want to hear from the Met Council on that. I've made that assurance to you, and I want
Thank
to keep
you.
That. And then there's a couple of other things kind of floating out there. I can't remember what they are. So at some point, we're going to come back together again as a committee for just to receive information sometime in the next few weeks. So stay tuned there. All right. With that, we are adjourned. Thank you very much.